Welcome to Sales Talk for CEOs. I'm glad you're here. I'll be interviewing CEOs who have successfully scaled their B2B sales organization. In each episode, I'll start by uncovering the sales background of each CEO, dig into the strategies they use to build their sales organization, and wrap it up with what the future holds. We'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly of scaling a sales organization. I'm your host, Alice Hyman. Excited today to have Jake Dunlap with me. Not only is he a CEO who has built his sales organization and grown his sales tremendously, but he is somebody who helps other companies increase their sales also by focusing on sales and marketing strategies that are huge winners. If you do not already follow Jake on LinkedIn, do so. Welcome to the show.
I'm looking forward to this conversation. It should be a fun one.
It definitely will. I mean, even right before we got on, I was on your LinkedIn answering, commenting on something that you posted. I was like, yes, that is exactly right. You and I are so like-minded,
Love it.
So before we go back in time and get the whole story from you, tell us a little bit about what Scale does, because I know everyone in this audience, every CEO and everyone who supports a CEO is interested in what you do and they need to know.
Well, that's awesome. Yes. It's so funny. A lot of people who follow me, they're like, I don't even think I know what you do. It's like, well, I actually have like a whole company I run. It's not just posting on LinkedIn all the time.
Have a podcast too, right? Tell us about that as well.
YouTube and everything. I started the company. It's been almost exactly 10 years, which is kind of crazy to think about. We are a revenue strategy operations and enablement company. And really what that means, we've got 40 plus people globally. And what we do is we help organizations optimize components of their process. So, how do we generate demand through retained customers? And then the sales operations, and how do we then implement the right technology to help to make that process more effective? So we've got a mix of senior sales strategy folks, enablement team members, certified Salesforce, certified HubSpot people, and a whole bunch of other sales technologies where we really help to optimize and improve different, bottlenecks that people might be having throughout their sales journey. So that's the high level on it.
And especially bridging the gap between sales and marketing, right? So that sales can actually
produces. That's right. When we can, we want to fix that. If not, then we just figure out how to work
around it. Exactly. Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. I always say that. It's like, well, if we had a marketing team to do this, but we don't. So here's what we're going to do instead. And I do hope that all of you have your sales and marketing aligned, but I know
the pro tip on that one, I'll tell you, is comp plan. That if you've got a marketing organization that's compensated on one thing and a sales organization that's compensated and there's no overlap, you're not going to have marketing and sales alignment. So look at the comp plan of your leadership teams. That's my quick advice.
Yeah. And now tell us about your podcast real quick before I take you back in time.
Yeah, it's fun. It's called The Jake Dunlap Show. I couldn't come up with anything else more original. So we went with that. I hated all the other names. But we talked to leaders. We talked primarily almost exclusively to CEOs or almost all CEOs. And we talk about their journey, similar to what we're going to do today. I like to go back in time to when they were kids. And what I found consistently is like, there are these weird things that happened to us when we were like 7, 8, 9, 10. That like put this chip on our shoulder. We got a chance to experience something. And so I really love uncovering these kind of things that make people tick. And that's, if you're interested in that, obviously, if you're listening to this show, I think you'll probably like the Jake Dunlap Show as well.
Absolutely. All right. So you started this amazing company and you've been able to grow the sales. And I want to know what you were doing right before you started the company and what gave you this brilliant idea to start Scaled.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting. I am not one of those people who thought they would be an entrepreneur or start my own company. I look back and in retrospect, I was always like a leader at like a new group within a company or at a small team. And my grandfather had started his own banking. He had banks, a lot of banks everywhere, but my parents weren't entrepreneurs. And I really never thought I would start a company. I had no, I don't know, like, I'm going to start doing my own thing. You know, really what for me it was as a VP of sales and success at Glassdoor, then, you know, decided to move to New York, was the sales leader there. And I mean, I'm like, I was young. I mean, I was like 30, you know, at the time, 31, 30, 30, 31, 32, running these sales orgs and building these machines. And I was not very good at politics. It's the truth of it. And, you know, I had a run in with my CFO where we just couldn't see eye to eye on something.
Yeah.
And I got fired. And I'm like, not for the performance of the job. I was really good at the work, right, like, you know, right, building, scaling. I just sucked. I just didn't know, like, I wasn't very good at like understanding the big, you know, across the org, et cetera. And what I did is I just sat there. I said, talked to myself. I'm like, is this my path? I'm just going to go every 3 years or 4 years to the next company and make more money and be a VP of sales. You know, and I'm like, why am I doing this for other people? Like, they don't have any loyalty. There's no loyalty to me, especially as a sales leader. You know, product sucks, economy's down. It's like, your fault. It's like, okay, well, don't know how I can make up for that. So that was really it. I said, you know, I really kind of said, well, what's the path? I love it. I love building and scaling sales orgs. I love sales. I love the process of sales. And was like, cool. Like, maybe I can just make a thing out of this. And I started my business. I started cold outreach. I went to Crunchbase. I found people that just raised a seed, series A, series B, and started reaching out cold to CEOs. Hey, you know, chances are you're probably thinking about these challenges. I've faced them multiple times. Let me know if you need help. And sure enough, within the first, you know, probably 45 days, I had, you know, a few customers. And just been figuring it out since then. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I love just how friendly that approach was. It wasn't like, hey, I've got something to sell you. It's like, hey, I've done this a few times and I thought maybe you could use some help. Let me know.
Exactly.
And I think that is a great approach and one that many miss because they're trying to be so salesy when they start writing their emails, as you know, but interesting. So you were on your own, you started this company. Yep. Maybe, you know, you were like me, sort of an accidental entrepreneur. Absolutely planned out, but after I, you know, learned what the word entrepreneur meant, I was like, oh yeah, I've been an entrepreneur my entire life. I am a starter of things, you know. Yep. And it sounds like even though you didn't think of yourself as an entrepreneur, you were the same way. And you did start up a lot of sales teams just for other people, right?
Exactly.
Now you started up your own company and you're going to help other companies do the same. So what happened? How did you grow? And you got your first sales by like just grit, like get out there. You found a great Crunchbase. What a great idea. What happened next? I mean, you obviously had to sell and deliver, which, you know, is my model as well. And then how did you start to really grow from there?
You know, I made a lot of mistakes early, meaning, you know, I didn't really have a clear vision or like idea of what I wanted the company to be early on. And I think that probably set us back, you know, years, if I kind of look retrospectively. Yeah. You know, in the very beginning, you know, it was like, oh, is this project you have like somewhat related to sales? Like, okay, we'll do it.
I remember those days though. Wait,
you know, you're like, oh, screening your resumes for SDRs. Like, oh yeah, sure, yeah, that's our core business. That's our core business. That's actually what we do.
James, listen, my mastermind group had to actually say to me, this is years ago because I was, you know, I've been doing this for 20 plus years now, but they said to me, Alice, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
That is a great motto for any CEO.
Doing a lot of stuff, right?
And that's kind of the danger of a services business in general, right? Is like, you know, we can just create a new product, you know, if we wanted to, or it doesn't mean we'd have, you know, somebody who could fulfill it, but and so I think the first few years I started hiring people. I knew I didn't want a lifestyle business. Like I knew I was too young, you know, I just like, I'm 30, like 33 or something at the time. I'm like, I don't want a lifestyle, you know, business. Like I want to try to like build something. And I think for the first few years, you know, I just wasn't because I didn't know exactly what I wanted it to be, or at least have it more defined. You know, I hired a lot of people and they were kind of like jacks of all trades. They could do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but you know, that I couldn't afford to pay someone who has already been there and done it. And so I think the first few years was really trying to kind of figure out what we were going to do, who we were going to be. And it really was the turning point was really 20, what would have been 2017, I think 2017. So we're like 3 or 4 years in now. And I was totally against working with contractors. I thought everybody had to be full time because if they, you know, if they weren't contractors, if they were contractors, they wouldn't care. And boy, was I wrong. And what happened is I started to have people that I'd worked with, salespeople and sales leaders that I'd worked with that are like, hey, I'm starting my own startup. I got 20 hours a week. You know, oh, I'm doing this thing. I'm writing a book. Yeah. Could we, you know, and I knew these people, I vetted them. I'm like, wait, I can get this. This guy will work for 20 hours. Great. And that allowed us to scale. that was a really important, we had documented enough processes. We had kind of our scaled way that we interacted. And so that allowed us to scale. So I think what I didn't, I don't know why I had this mindset. Maybe it was just my, you know, my experience was in today's world, there are so many experts out there that you can work with for 5 hours a week or 10 hours, right, or 20 hours, or 30 hours. And so once we started to specialize is, you know, really, you know, when the business started to grow. So that was like, I think it was like 2017, we closed our first two, you know, large, we closed a deal with Microsoft and deal with LinkedIn. And that's really when it started to be like, okay, I think I have a path of like where I see we can go. And like, we don't do sales, like one-off sales trainings. That was kind of the decision that we made that, you know, we wanted to do, you know, if we are going to do that, it's going to be customized and it's going to be, there's going to be pull through. So we started to really think about, you know, who we wanted to be, what we wanted to become, and, you know, kind of really hone in on, you know, the messaging and the company that we are today.
Yeah. So were you doing all the selling in the beginning, the first years?
Yeah. And again, a lot of it was, I was nervous, you know, it's like, and then having to do a lot of the fulfillment as well, because, you know, maybe it was the way that I was selling, et cetera. You know, people are like, oh, I don't, you know, I get Jake or I don't get Jake. And, you know, we got past that relatively quickly. But yeah, over the years, we hired a few different sales people. Some of them had been consultants for us, et cetera. And it never really worked out. You know, again, obviously, as a CEO, everything's my fault. So, you know, when I look at it, it's I didn't do a good enough job documenting. I didn't really know the DNA of the person that I needed. And so, this person's been in sales. And just because they've been successful, selling a service is much different than selling a, you know, physical product. Unless your service is like a thing. It's like, well, my service is I do this one thing. That's easier. I think we struggled to say, as a consulting firm, you know, the it's classically like, tell me what your problem is and I'll tell you how we can help you. And that doesn't necessarily package itself well when you're trying to get to go proactively to market. So I think over time we've gotten better at that. And that's why we have we hired a salesperson in June. So, you know, not that long ago, and she is killing it now. And I think it's because of a couple of things. One, we knew what we needed. We needed a salesperson with experience selling services, and she had that. Yeah. And two, you know, we've consistently gotten better at packaging how we explain what we do. That's now easier for someone to replicate. And so, you know, we went through a lot of misses. And again, I take 100% responsibility for that. And I think if you're a CEO and you're trying to scale, think about those things. Do I have this down to where I can pitch this and it's not just my own energy and charisma? And, you know, look for people that have been there and done it in a similar space. It's not a guarantee for success by any means. But that ended up being, I think, what's made our sales rep now and our SDR so successful.
Absolutely. And I do think that as a CEO, when we start to grow, we don't want to have to be involved in every single activity that goes on in our company. And especially CEOs who didn't come from a sales background would like to just be free of sales immediately, right? As soon as possible, get some salespeople in here. But we see that fail over and over again. And like you said, it's because if you can't package it up and sell it well, how do you expect anybody else to do it?
Exactly.
They, you know, a lot of the engineers and stuff will say to me, well, I don't know how to sell. I need a salesperson who knows how to sell. You're like, no, you don't. You know how to solve. Therefore, you know how to sell. And if you get it out of your mind, whatever you think, whatever goofy idea you have of what sales is, some kind of trickery, manipulation, coercion, whatever you think, it's none of those things. It's simply talking to people and understanding what they need and what they've done before, what worked, what didn't work, why they're in this situation now today, what all their choices are, and then just help guide them and give them some advice. And then it just turns into you're doing
that's
business.
All it is. I mean, that literally is the crux of it. And look, I'll say this for all the founders listening. I can count on I've talked to over the 10 years, thousands of founders, some companies that have went on to become true unicorns and exit, you know, with massive to companies that have failed. And I'll tell you this, I can count on two hands how many founders I've seen that didn't have to somehow figure out the go-to-market motion themselves before hiring in the first sales leader or salespeople. I call it what times I see with engineering founders is they're looking for the Messiah hire. This person is going to come down and sell for me and build process and do this.
A sales hero. They want to hire a sales hero.
It's never going to happen. You got to give up all. I tell them, I say, guys, give up all hope. It's never going to happen. And I'll tell you a story about a founder. This is the most classic example, at least for me, of this. This company ended up exiting, selling for over $100 million plus dollars. They couldn't figure out the SDR motion. Brett was the founder's name. And they're like, why aren't these SDRs successful? Like, we know that there's product market fit here, right? Like we know that and so he fired himself as CEO, hired himself as an SDR for the next 45 days, figured it out, scaled the team, and the rest, you know, literally within like a year, they sold for $120 million.
Love that. Love that, because he heard what the customers were saying. He saw what the SDRs were running up against, and then he could solve for that, right? Because he had no idea. You put people on the phone to dial for dollars. Okay, even let's say you give them a targeted list, we're still out there dialing for dollars. If you don't have your message exactly right, and you haven't targeted exactly right, and you know, you don't say the right things, you're just going nowhere fast. And so that's exactly. Brilliant that he did that. And
I tell that story all the time. And again, if you are a CEO, nobody is ever going to care as much as you ever. Right. So, you know, when you have that mindset of like, well, they should want like, what, why? Are they a 10% owner in your company? A 20% owner? And like what's their incentive? You know, like, and when you realize that, you realize, look, it's your job to fix these problems. You can't outsource your problems. Now, again, you want to hire smart people who eventually can take over certain things. But many times in the early days, you need to at least be functionally aware of what good looks like around a function. It could be finance, sales, marketing. It doesn't really matter. So you've got that pulse, and then you can, you know, the right type of people to hire in, because you understand what it's going to take to be successful to some extent. And again, I'm all for, you know, starting a company with multiple people. I think that's something, if I could have done it over again, I probably would have done that. You know, having those one or two other people at the table, both could be good and bad. You know, I don't know with my history, who knows, but.
Well, you know, it's something that I always say is that the CEO will always have a role in sales, but that role changes as the company matures. Right. And especially for founders, when it's their first startup and they're not from a sales background, they absolutely have to be the chief sales officer of their company. They have to be the chief customer officer, and they have to know and understand their customer's journey and take that journey with the customer enough times to really understand how then to train someone else to do that. And if they don't do that, I see them failing. The only case where I see a little difference in that, someone that I interviewed the other day for the podcast, it was his fourth startup.
Exactly.
And he's like, I made all my mistakes at the first three startups. Not that I won't make any more, but now I know how to start this. It starts with founder-led growth. Then I do this. Then this is who I hire. And this, and he, you know, he's got it down. So yes, if you have that luxury, if you've done it a few times, other than that, for everyone out there in the audience listening, it's really important to be involved in sales and stay involved in sales as a CEO. So you may be a startup or you may be 20 years old. There is an important role that you play. And today, because our buyer's journey has changed and the complexities, you know, and the amount of people and all the competition, all of those things, the CEO really has to know the journey or we're in bad shape.
Exactly. And then, and also just to keep your finger on the pulse too, of like what's happening. Right. Even, you know, again, like I look, I get really great people in seats And then I'm just looking. I'm going to spot every once in a while. Oh, what's happening here? What's happening here? And that's really, I mean, I have that luxury now, but it's taken a long time to get here. You know, like, again, finding the right leadership team too, like that is, you know, lots of ups and downs there. I'd say another kind of learning around that same vein is I kept making the mistake that I make more often than not, and I haven't made it in a few years, which is good. I think I've cured myself of it, maybe, or at least for like a period. is trying to make people the people. And what I mean by that is I think when you're scaling a business sometimes, you know, you're like, oh, if this person could also handle this thing, then, oh my gosh, that would be great. And what happens is you know, there's a concept called the Peter principle, if you're not familiar, which means that we all rise to our like highest level to where we get to a point of incompetence. And and not because we're dumb, it's just because like we don't know how to do it. And so another mistake that I made when I was scaling early is I kept hiring more junior people and putting them in roles that they were not set up to be successful in.
Right, because they cost us less, and we think, oh, they're nice and they've got good energy, and maybe they can learn how to do this. Yeah,
high potential. You know, oh, yeah, he can. And it's like, no, like you know, now I meet people with where they're at, and what I find is like, even if I'm not getting that extra thing taken care of, they're so much happier and more productive in the work that they're doing. It doesn't even matter. And so that would be another lesson as you're kind of scaling your team is, you know, you want to give people challenges, but you don't want to put them in positions where they can't be successful.
Right.
And I know, and you'll convince yourself, no. Yeah, no, she can do it. Yeah. And then you're going to find yourself frustrated, and then they're going to quit or you're going to fire them. And it's your fault 100%. And so that would be the other lesson I would say about scaling your leadership team for sure.
Yeah. And you really can't scale your sales if you don't scale your leadership properly around you. I mean, you maybe can do it for a short time, but you can't sustain it unless you've really built a good team to help you do that.
Mm-hmm. And it takes time. I think don't be so anxious to hand things off, you know, like, and I think especially when you're early scaling, don't be so anxious to get it off your plate, get it right. And then get it off your plate. Yeah. Or, you know, if you find the perfect person, great, but don't try to make people the people, where you're going to be disappointed a lot. And you're going to create an environment where they're not happy either. They know they're failing. They know they can't, they're like, I've never done this before. Like, why is he upset? Like, I'm or like, why am I not getting the results? It's like, it's not your fault. It's my fault. I put you in the wrong role.
Yeah. So let's talk some more about how you did grow your sales and your sales organization. Yeah. So in the beginning, you did a lot of the selling, hired some salespeople that didn't work out, you know, like you said, take full responsibility for that because, oh, well, wasn't set up to help them succeed. But where did you really see the change where you mentioned you had landed a couple really much bigger clients and How did that work? How did that happen? How did you find them? How did you land them? And what did your sales organization look like at that time?
Yeah, that was still probably me and bringing in a couple other people at that phase. You know, and what I started to realize is the power of partnerships, meaning most of the deals we had were a mix of us actively sourcing, some word of mouth early on. But we started to form partnerships with other services firms. And, you know, and that's where kind of we're like, hey, we're not going to play in that world. So we'll send those types of people to you. You don't want to play in our world, so send those types of people to us. And that's, you know, that's how we landed some of those first big deals was through partnerships where, you know, the other partner was like, well, we don't really do that type of engagement, but go talk to the guys that scaled and, you know, see what they're doing. So that happened for a while. I think what we did figure out though, by about 2018, so about, you know, three or four years ago, is people, the way that we started positioning is people weren't expecting me to work on the engagement. And that actually, that's maybe more like 2019. Mm-hmm. You know, it took a while for us to at least develop a sales pitch that wasn't Jake is the sales pitch.
Right.
Does that make sense?
They're selling Jake, you know, selling a service versus selling
Nobody
Jake.
Nobody expects it anymore. I mean, honestly, like, I don't promise it. I think I also felt the need to say it like, oh yeah, I'll be involved and all blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And it's like, that just isn't scalable. And again, we've developed enough processes and systems and documentation. That was another just monumentally stupid mistake that I made for a long time is the more you document processes and create standards. And, you know, we use a tool internally called Notion now that we were using Google, you know, we've been using Google Drive and we'd done a bunch of different things that I think we created a lot of redundancies because we were really poor at documentation and process and standardization for a long time. And I think we're just now as an organization where that's starting to become a strong suit of the work.
It's important.
It doesn't feel like it in the moment, right?
It's like where you can't scale without writing it down and having everybody know where it is and being able to use it and learn from it.
Exactly. And you don't feel like, again, like going back to like scaling the sales team, it's like, you know, I could sit there and write a document that says, before you scope an engagement, you do these 15 things, right? Or whatever it is. And I would pump that activity consistently. And so, you know, again, trying to hire people in, they're like, they got to like learn all this stuff through figuring it out. And that's frustrating. Whenever the knowledge existed, I just, you know, I kept it in my head. And so again, that's where, you know, if I look at why we couldn't scale sales sooner, I just think we were really bad at documenting these best practices and things to do to where someone could come in, as opposed to them having to kind of, you know, almost like I equate it to like the lights are off and you're kind of feeling around what's happening, like what's in the room. Like, oh, I think that's a TV and that's a couch and that's a, you know, like, as opposed to if you document everything, it's like you flip the light switch on. It took me, and I think that's why we're finally scaling our sales org. You know, we've got two people, you know, we've got two new people in it that are just, you know, doing extremely well. But I think it's because of, you know, where we've been at from a documentation standpoint.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have seen a lot of CEOs make that mistake of, I call it, they abdicate instead of delegate, right? So they know how to do something.
That's a good way to put it, yeah.
And they hire someone who they think knows how to do that thing, right? And so they're like, here you go. That's abdicating. Versus delegating would be like, I've hired you to do this thing and you're going to watch me do it for a while. And then you're going to ask me questions and we're going to talk about it. You may have some better ways and we'll discuss that. I've also written it down here so you can review it. And then once you've watched me do it for a while, then you're going to do it and I'm going to watch you. And then I'm going to give you some feedback. And then, you know, we're going to fine tune things and I'm going to take your opinion on things and we're going to, you know, work this together. And then you're going to be on your own doing it. And then we're going to have expectations in place and we're going to hold you accountable to do the things that we both decided were going to work the best, right? Now that takes time, and that's why CEOs would rather abdicate than delegate. But the results are vastly different. When I hear CEOs complaining that salespeople don't ramp up quickly and, you know, they've only got X amount of dollars and the investors are nervous and they've got this high paid salesperson and 8 months later, they still haven't closed anything. I'm like, you have a complex sale. You really expected them to ramp up and close something within 8 months? Like, that's nearly impossible. Your CEO can't even do that, you know? So it's always amazing to me how, you know, people are just willing to abdicate and then, you know, blame or they don't even understand. They're like, well, I just don't understand why this person can't do this. And I've, you know, I hear CEOs, Jake, say to me, I outsell my salespeople every month. I go, yeah.
You should.
Like, you're surprised?
I tell every founder, and it's a very simple rule, and you can, you know, people may or may not agree. 80% as good as me. That is the bar. If I can find people that are 80% as good as me, and keep in mind, I'm an expert at sales, and I'm not saying this like toot my own horn. I've ran tens of thousands of sales calls. I've been doing this for a long time, so. You know, I'm also in like a different type of CEO, right? Like I come from that side, you know, versus like the finance side or the, you know, engineering side. Even for me, I'm like, if they're 80% as good as me, that is fantastic. They get to 90%. Amazing. You know, but like, you got to set realistic expectations. You know, they're not me. They don't have my experience. I can't train them to have X years of experience in what we do. So you got to kind of manage your expectations a little bit too.
Absolutely. All right. So now you've got some partners that refer you and you've got now yourself and two more salespeople. So you're going to grow sales even more. Let's talk about those partners though for a minute before we get over to what we're looking at for the salespeople to do. How do you work with your partners? How do you keep them engaged? And because you don't probably always have something to refer back to them. So it's not, you know, quid pro quo necessarily, but how do you pick your partners? How do you keep them engaged? And how do you flow the work?
Okay, this is another learning moment. So for those of you who are, you know, kind of thinking about, you know, either expanding your partnership program, and again, just another learning that took too many years to figure out. You know, when we started this, you know, I think it was very clear for us, there'd be kind of two different types of partners. There would be services partners, people that offer complementary services, and technology partners. So we're the largest implementation partner for outreach. We were Salesloft's first implementation partner. We've done tons of other seismic Insight Squared. We've done like 75 deployments. So, but again, this is all over time, right? So we knew that we had these like tech partnerships where when people are implementing the technology, just like you'd hire a Salesforce consultant, that these sales technologies also would need services. So we had kind of these two different groups of partners. Now, here's what I didn't do. And this was literally, I kid you not, we solved this problem like 2 weeks ago. And I'm talking about 2017 here. So this is how long it took me to figure it out. I didn't ever really define what made a good partner for us. And so what that meant is I took probably hundreds of calls with people and other technologies that were just like never going to be a fit. And I never really took the time to think, okay, like what is a best fit partner? So now we've got like three different partners. Okay, you're a peer referral partner. Here's what that actually means and what we're going to do. Okay, you're what we call an alliance referral partner. Okay, that means we do that and we do this. Oh, you're an alliance implementation partner. That means you do this, this, and this. And because of that, I wasted a lot of time with companies that were never going to be a good partnership for us. And, you know, so over time, that's what we've realized is that the best partner, like you don't have to go all in with us. That's fine. Then this is what we're going to dedicate back to you. And we're going to compensate you financially. And so, you know, when we talk about keeping our services partners happy, I just want to write them big checks to where they just keep sending us more people. So they don't worry about the quid pro quo. And that's why I don't do handshake deals. When people tell me like, yeah, Jake, that's cool. Let's do this. I'm like, nope. I was like, look, I never want this relationship to feel lopsided ever. So in order to do that, how about every deal you send us, I'm going to give you 15% or 10% or 20%, depending on what the partner is. Because I don't ever want it to get to what you said. So that would be my advice. When you're scaling partners, be very intentional about what you want. And so then you can kind of help to manage that expectation with new partners. And then always make sure there's enough what's in it for me with a partner to where they actually will activate and send you new business. Because that's the other thing. It's like, look, if 10%, you know, if you're selling a product and I'm giving someone 10% on a $20,000 deal, let's say, or, you know, that's $2,000. Now, if you're layering on a $40,000 deal, do you really care about are you going to jeopardize adding $20,000 in expenses for a $2,000 commission? No chance. So that's another issue I see with partnerships is you got to make sure that the incentive is interesting enough for those partners. And now we've baked that stuff into our tiering system. So we know like if we can't get it to where it's interesting enough, then they're not going to refer us either. So those are just some of my learnings and things that I've solved in the last three to four. Well, and I shouldn't take credit for it. My team actually finally solved it, but.
Well, and I might add to that, if you haven't already thought about building an onboarding program so that there is a process. So now you know exactly who is the right partner, what tier they fit in, you all agree, then what onboarding you're giving them, meaning what training, how do they learn who's who at your company, what ongoing training do you give them, what collateral do they need, or how they link to your website, all of those things in that nice little onboarding package. Maybe there's a portal or a place they can always get to it. And, you know, somebody's checking in on them on a regular basis besides the CEO, that is important too. But nurturing partners, nurturing any kind of channel, right, takes work. And we need a really good onboarding process to get them engaged and keep them engaged besides the initial, hey, here's the carrot. Sounds good. Yeah, I want to do it. But then no business comes, right?
That is the story of my life. I mean, if I can tell you how many, because that's what happened. I finally just got like so sick of it. And I'm like,
why do we have these partners?
Why am I taking another call with another? And again, part of it is like, I mean, I think we do, like you have a lot of these things as a business owner. And even if you're not a business owner in your job where, you know, you're kind of walking through every day, continuing to do the things that you've done the day before, And you have to build in those times to just kind of take a step back. And that's what I started to see. Is I started to finally see the impact I was having on my team. So I've got two people that handle partnerships. And I'm like, Jake, you are wasting everybody's time. So you need to start to be more draw the line in the sand, et cetera, as opposed to like chasing the next shiny thing. So I think I finally kind of hit that breaking point. And, you know, I wish I would have had the foresight to do the same thing 3 years ago.
Well, sometimes we have to, you know, we don't know what we don't know, and it takes us time to learn, and there's no harm in that, but we always want to do it faster, better, right? Mm-hmm. All right. So you've got these partners now, sounds like going in a really good direction. You've
yes,
got
very good.
Two salespeople besides yourself. Are you going to be launching new products, going into new markets, hiring more sales?
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah, so it's exciting. So we've got our first folks in Europe now. So we've got two full-time people in London. So we're going to have a big focus in Europe. We've been working with companies, you know, expanding to the US and in Europe for years. We've worked with hundreds of companies, but we never had really an effort there. So I'm really excited to grow that out next year. And, you know, we're going to be kind of changing our positioning a little bit. You know, there's this term RevOps, revenue operations, which is pretty the latest buzzword over the last couple of years. But it actually is a really good synopsis of what we do, which is, you know, it's looking at the end-to-end value chain of, you know, your customer journey and experience. Where are the bottlenecks today? How do we condense things? And then again, the technology and the data and the insights to report and to kind of always optimize. So, you know, for us, I think we're really trying to position ourselves as, you know, the go-to firm that's going to help you like solve these very acute challenges or help you to diagnose what those challenges are, because we understand the technology that you need to have to understand what the data is and to get the data that you need and to process it, and the best practices and how to optimize a process for your business versus like necessarily like one size fits all. So I think I'm excited to kind of continue to simplify our message. And there'll be a lot, kind of come January, that we're going to be talking about in terms of this idea of revenue operations, strategy, and enablement, where I think we're kind of uniquely positioned to take a really dominant place in the market around that holistic understanding. So those are the things I'm excited about. I love sales technology too. It's like so fun to watch like the evolution of these tools and what's happening.
And now the consolidation of these tools.
And now the consolidation, and now five of them do the same thing. And that's a whole other thing where, you know, it's so interesting. It's like, you know, Salesforce started, you know, HubSpot was always this like kind of all-in-one encompassing platform, didn't really partner with anybody. Now they have tons of technology integration. Salesforce was the opposite. They're like, hey, we just do this thing, do plugins. And now you're kind of seeing sales tech had went from like disjointed to like, now we want to be this all-in-one platform. I think there's just going to be some pretty big winners and losers around that.
Or people
are going to believe the video, or they're going to believe the hype of one tool versus the other. But there are some really cool the platform plays that we're seeing that are actually pretty cool and interesting.
All right. So before we part ways today, I got to get a little expert advice from you too, because as I started off saying, you know, I wanted to interview you about how you grew your sales organization, but you have so much knowledge about sales and how we can increase sales. And so just, you know, looking at today's economy and looking at what's happening, I mean, most of my clients are still growing and hiring, but we of course are hearing about layoffs and companies that are scaling back. But most of the people that I work with, most of the companies are probably between 20 and 100 million, and they're trying to, you know, grow exponentially and maybe double in sales in the next 2 or 3 years. What are just some of the key things about the modern selling motions that CEOs should be paying attention to and making sure that their sales leaders really know and understand and are applying to their sales teams and to their entire go-to-market organization? Because quite frankly, we all know that sales is not about sellers anymore. It's about the way the customer buys, right? So what would you say are some of the things CEOs should be keenly aware of in that aspect?
Well, you nailed it. Yeah, you nailed it. That's the conversation I'm having over and over again. We've lost our way a little bit, meaning what's happened is the way that we bought as consumers really didn't change that much until like 4 or 5 years ago, right? Like people went to stores, you did this stuff, like the way that you bought, you know, you were starting to purchase things online before Amazon, but like still, you still went to like, our consumer buying pattern really hadn't changed too dramatically. Well, what's happened over the last 5 years is I want you to think about this. Like, how much, think about how you used to buy things in 2017 or 2016. Guess what? Amazon, I don't know. Did they have next day shipping? I don't think so.
No.
Right? Like, so how many of you in the last week or two have selected a product on Amazon, realized it was not going to come the next day or the day after, and then deselected that product and instead picked an inferior product or what you thinking about? Everyone, I know all of you are raising your hand right now. That is the world that we live in. We live in a world of now, on my terms. I want to consume information when I want to. I want things at the tip of my fingers. I don't want roadblocks, etc. The problem is B2B sales is in the stone age right now. Because what we've done is we've created a process where the salesperson is a gatekeeper to information. And we train people to be gatekeepers. To say, well, get them on the call. Hey, Jake, can I hop on the call? Hey,
if you have any information, you won't send them anything. Don't do anything until you get
that
call.
I used to preach that too, because guess what? I had that luxury.
Because used to work. Look, it was different. 20 years ago when I was selling, oh my gosh, I could still walk into somebody's business and talk to a CEO or a senior sales leader. I could walk in the door and do that. You can't even get them to answer their phone anymore.
Exactly. So that's what I want you to think about is, so if I'm a CEO, I need to have different sales paths for different buyer types. And I'm really, there's not a ton. There's like cold. Somebody doesn't know anything. How do we move them? I call the next tier up educated. So these people who maybe they've used a competitor, et cetera, they know a little bit about the market. How do I fast track those people? And then there's another group of people that I call vetted. And these people, they've already been on your website. They've talked to two of your competitors. They know what pricing is because again, that information also wasn't available publicly. So they had to talk to a salesperson. So we have to realize that this old archaic qualification call is done. Those companies, like just like in Amazon, inferior companies will start to beat you for deals because their process is better. It's more enjoyable. I cannot tell you how many executives I talk to. And I say, tell me about your last experience with a sales rep. They're like, oh, God, the first call was horrible. Abysmal. And it's like, I cannot tell you how many times I've heard, I bought the product despite how terrible the process was.
Exactly. We are making it hard for people to buy from us. I always say, what are you doing today to make it easier to be your customer and harder to be your competitor, right? Look at your process. You are literally making it hard for me to buy from you. Why? Because you want to block me from information. And our buyers we need to meet them where they are and where they are. So, I happen to be on Instagram and I want to learn this. I should be able to click and learn. I'm on your website. Why can't I see a demo? Why do I have to wait to book a demo? You can't show me how your product works? Come on, give me a break, right? Especially most of the software.
How many companies even have, and I'll talk tech companies, it is shocking to me how few even have a demo online you can look at. Like what year is this? I can't and go and look at demo this thing software ahead of time.
It's crazy because there's software that even lets the person guide themselves through the demo based on like, answer this question, it takes you this way, answer this way. There's all kinds of software to do it. You can do the basics to just pique their interest so then they want to talk to a salesperson. Here's what blows me away, Jake. Most tech companies don't even have a live chat on their website, let alone a chat bot, right? And some of the chat bots are so useless. Some of them are okay and they can dish up actual links and things for you to click. But here's what's amazing that people aren't getting in a B2B sale. I have my day job and I'm also on this committee to buy this thing that I may have never, ever, ever purchased before in my life because I'm a millennial and I just, you know, I don't know how to buy this kind of software, but
I don't know how to collaborate across groups.
I don't know how the decision is made at my company. I don't know who else needs to be involved in the sale. All that old band stuff, you could just throw it out the window because these people are qualified to buy. They need what you have, but they don't even know how to buy it themselves, right? But then you think, when are these people looking, right? So if I'm busy all day with my clients and doing my regular job, then I get home, I get dinner, I put the kids to bed, and between 9 and midnight is when I can go research your software or your solution for my company. Between 9 and midnight, my time, whatever time zone I'm on, whatever time zone you're on. And I can get zero information because I can't talk to a salesperson at that time of day.
Yep.
So think about how hard you're making it for people to buy. Think about your own buying habits for business and then make that access easy, right? That's what CEOs really have to make sure their companies are doing is that access. Let the buyer have access to the information they need.
Have you done that? That would be my parting thought is just go map your customer journey. Just go think, reimagine it. Get in a room. Okay, what first touch point? Okay, what could we do to surprise and delight and get people moving fast? Oh, we could do this. Just it's time. So go ahead, go do that, and you'll be in a much, much better spot.
Oh my gosh, this has been great. I could talk to you all day. Thank you so much, Jake, for coming on the show, sharing your journey, sharing the things that worked and the things that didn't, and for giving us some sales advice all in less than an hour. I really, really appreciate you.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Sales Talk for CEOs. You can find me at alicehyman.com. Be sure and connect with me on LinkedIn and let me know that you heard the show. If you found value in today's episode, please subscribe, write a review, and share the show with another CEO.